future. There are no people. There are no people in the future.
No people at all.
There are no people in the future.
Where did all my people go?
There are no people in the future.
Let me try my people call.
Everybody, welcome, welcome. It is Friday, October 29th, 2021. Welcome to Raging Chicken's Out the Coop podcast. This is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken. Each week, I talk to the campaign manager for Scott Perry for Prison 2022, Sean Kitchen, about the good, the bad, and the ugly in state and national politics. Yes, we are streaming live on our YouTube channel, so don't forget to smash that subscribe button, like the stream, and hit the bell so you know every time we go live. And if you're listening to this as a podcast, just take a couple minutes, head on over to our YouTube channel, hit that subscribe button. Like, we want to hit the 200 subscriber marks pretty soon, so get on over there, tell your friends, and smash those subscriptions. On today's show, Build Back Better? We shall see. One thing is clear, that there would have been next to nothing if it had not been for the Progressive Caucus's willingness to hold their ground and not cave to pressure from Nancy Pelosi and corporate Democrats. We'll check in with some folks with the American Prospect. We'll take a look at some of the rundowns of Los Angeles Times and Vox. Just get a sense of kind of what's going on there. We don't have a full deal quite yet. I'll keep on checking the news as we're recording, but we shall see. And yes, it's climate emergency time, everybody. Yes, COP26 gets off and running on Sunday. Yes, on Halloween Day in Glasgow, Scotland. That comes as we've had more kind of disturbing news about the time that we have left to avoid catastrophe. And yet it seems that there's a lot of people who've got their heads in the freaking sand, right, about the need to act definitively and quickly and bigly. We'll talk about that a little bit. We're going to actually be focusing on Out to Coop Live on our Monday show. We're going to be really focusing in on climate on Monday. So we'll probably talk a little bit about it today, but tune in on Monday at 7 p.m. So we can really dig into what's actually happening in the particulars, what's happening with the launch of COP26, and what's in this this Build Back Better bill. This week was also huge. Again, thanks to progressives in Congress, is that Big Oil was forced to come in and testify before Congress. And what'd they bring? You got it. Lies, diversion, more lies, right? But at the end of that, you got Carol Maloney saying, well, you know what? We asked you for all these records. You didn't comply. So now we're going to subpoena them. And that gave them a little like lump in the throat. They're like, oh, wait, you're serious about that? You were serious? We're the oil companies, right? You're serious about that? Yes, indeed. And a new report from Molly Taft and Emily Atkins shows how Big Oil used newsletter ads to spread misinformation. Yep, Big Oil targeted Punchbowl, Politico, Axios, and some other newsletters that are popular inside the Beltway to make sure that misinformation got there ahead of their big testimony yesterday before Congress. There you go. And Cuomo, the disgraced governor of New York. Yep, charges finally get dropped. Although the circumstances around it were a little weird, because it seems like even the victim in this case did not realize that they were going to be dropped yesterday or this morning or yesterday. So that was something. Harvard University graduate students head into day 3 of their strike. Yes, the university administration has refused to meet their demands. And, you know, that comes as Harvard has the largest endowment in the world. Yep, it topped $53 billion during the pandemic. And as the university also reported, a $283 million operating surplus. So clearly they're broke. But other news, this just happened this morning. SEPTA workers basically came, they got a contract, or they got at least a tentative agreement. So they will not be striking on Monday. That had been looming for folks, especially in Philadelphia. But SEPTA workers, looks like they're going to have a contract. We'll see the details about that. And Facebook changes its name to Meta. Just because, whatever. But that also kind of, they also happened at the same time they gave a sneak peek to its virtual life platform called Metaverse, which is a little freaking freaky, to be honest with you. But, you know, whatever. These billionaires want to live forever. And the judge in the Kyle Rittenhouse trial says that the people that he shot and killed cannot be referred to as victims in the trial. But it's okay if you refer to them as rioters. That's okay. Just not victims. Unfreaking believable. Yeah, the white supremacist trials that are going on right now are just freaking off the rails. You know, when you got one guy coming in and basically saying, oh, you know, I'm going to quote my source, and his source is like Mein Kampf. So, there you go. Today's PA Focus, Democratic gubernatorial hopeful Josh Shapiro says that he's not a fan of Tom Wolf's vanilla climate mitigation plans. And does that mean that Josh Shapiro wants to go bigger? No, no. It means that he wants to go smaller. At least that's what he was kind of indicating ahead of his meeting with the building trades. Yes, and what was his big deal? Yes, the problem to kind of join the regional greenhouse gas initiative. Yes, you know, that consortium of people in the Northeast who basically said, hey, look, because Donald Trump wasn't doing anything, we're going to do it for ourselves. So let's band together and get this done. Yeah, apparently Shapiro's got a problem with that. He's got a lot of good fluffy words around climate, but we'll still see what's going to happen. I got to tell you this. If you want to freaking take the air out of kind of progressive energy ahead of your kind of election, Shapiro, hey, have at it. Have at it. And Jake Corman begins flirting with his campaign for governor. Yes, he met with Pennsylvania's congressional Republicans at the Capitol Hill Club in D.C. over the week ago. And he's expected to announce after Election Day, which is Tuesday. Senator Corman is Senator Corman is announcing his run for governor while the Senate audit, big giant scare quotes around that, is polling at about 55% as opposed to 43% support. 55% opposed, I'm sorry, as opposed to 43% support. So it's like there's some questions there. Did you run it on Corman? And we got critical school board elections on Tuesday. Right, as we've been covered extensively on Raging Chicken, that yes, there's the school board elections are absolutely critical, but there's also a whole series of other kind of candidates that are on the ballot. Yes, you've got a kind of PA Supreme Court justice has got on the ballot. You've got depends on where you're at. But you have mayoral elections, you've got county elections, you've got sheriff elections, you got district attorney elections. I know in Bucks County, this is a huge deal, given what's been taking place in this county. So get out and vote on Tuesday. If you have your mail-in ballot and you have not mailed it in yet, do not put it in a mailbox. Bring it to a drop box or bring it to the elections office. Do not do it. Look that up online. Don't trust anything that you're getting from some rando on Facebook. Make sure you're kind of checking out where your drop boxes are and you're getting that ballot in ASAP, right? You have up until November 2nd to return a mail-in ballot if that's what you've received. Otherwise, you can vote in person as usual. Try to get that out. Yes, because you know what? Here in Bucks County, yes, the black flags are flying. Yep, Cyril Mikulenko dropped his latest piece about the increasing extremism in Bucks County. We're going to be talking to Cyril next week and on the Wednesday show about his piece that's looking at kind of the increasing number of the black American flags signalizing no quarter for any enemies. In other words, we'll kill you if you're a liberal, if we don't get our way. Crazy. And DSA activist, union organizer, and Philadelphia public school teacher Paul Prescott announced his campaign against Senator Anthony Williams for the Pennsylvania Senate. Yes, indeed. Williams is a charter school proponent and one of the caucus's largest recipients of Jeffrey Yass money. Yes, yes, we said yes. That's right. So this is about time. It's about time that Williams got challenged, right, by someone who's actually going to dig in and do the work. This is awesome. And speaking of Jeffrey Yass, Yes. And the Commonwealth Foundation are making it rain for judicial and school board candidates. The Commonwealth Leaders Fund gave at least $1.9 million in support of the PA Supreme Court nominee Judge Kevin Brobson. Then the Commonwealth Children's Choice Fund and Students First PAC also gave $145,000 to groups supporting right-wing school board candidates across the Commonwealth. Tuesday's election day. Did I mention that? November 2nd, that's election day. Get out and vote. And today's last call, yeah, we'll see what's kind of going on. Check it in, see what Sean's doing out there, what I'm doing out here. I've been reading Kate Aronoff's book, Overheated. You're going to talk a little bit about that. As you've stuck around for the last call before, you know that I've been kind of diving into my Dungeons and Dragons of late, and I just picked up a copy of Tasha's Cauldra of Everything, which is an interesting book because it's I got connected to all these kind of discussions around race and Dungeons and Dragons, which are freaking awesome. And Tasha's Cauldra of Everything was an attempt to kind of undo the way that kind of racial categories were kind of set up in D&D. So if you really want to go nerdy with me, stick around today's last call. And I'm still waiting to watch the new Dune. It is out. I cannot wait to watch it, but I have not had time. And I keep on seeing these people saying, man, it was great. And I'm dying. I'm a huge fan of Dune. I was a fan of the books when I was growing up. And yes, I know Frank Herbert is a kind of like Scientologist or whatever, crazy dude. But the book is freaking awesome, at least the first one. I didn't care for the later ones, actually.
I don't know. My friends were saying it's kind of like Star Wars.
Well, I mean, all those things are kind of like Star Wars. I mean, all these science fiction things are kind of like Star Wars. But yeah, anyway, we'll talk about it last call. Remind you, tune into the Rick Smith Show, streams every night on YouTube, Twitter, wherever you get your stream content. But better yet, head on over to thericksmithshow.com. Just get all the details about his podcast, how to sign up for his podcast, and all the shows he's got going. He's broadcasting on freespeechtv.org. He's on WBAI in New York, KPFK in Los Angeles, and freaking making waves, the Rick Smith Show. Congratulations. And if you haven't already, you got to check out the Sisters of the Night Caucus podcast. You can find it on Anchor, Spotify, iTunes, or wherever you get your podcast. The amazing PA women stirring the political cauldron behind this podcast rock the house. And they know where the bodies are buried. And make sure to follow them on Twitter at The Night Caucus. That's at The Night Caucus on Twitter. And for all you gamers out there, The Game Inn is a Quakertown-based black family-owned gaming store. They're friends of the show, and they've got everything from retro N64s to the latest consoles, video games for all platforms, collectibles, figures, Funko Pops, you got it. And with school back, yes, your kids get A's in their report cards. Have them bring it over to the Game Inn. You know why? They get a discount. How awesome is that? Check out the Game Inn on their Facebook page. Follow them on Twitter at The Game Inn. If you got a question about a game, look for something hard to find, shoot them an email at TheGameInPA. That's with two N's, TheGameInPA@gmail.com. Also, shout out goes to Jonathan Mann, yes, who wrote our intro song, There Are No People in the Future. You check out all his great stuff on his YouTube page and follow him on Twitter at SongOfDayMan with two N's. That's at SongOfDayMan on Twitter. We got some great stuff coming up on Out to Coop Live. As I mentioned kind of above, this Monday, November 1st, happens to be my sister's birthday too as well. Happy kind of early birthday to Corinne. We're going to be talking about COP26, the climate crisis. That's going to be kind of occupy a chunk of our time. Love to hear from people, especially you folks who have been following this or are concerned about the climate. We're going to be kind of digging into that on Monday. We're also going to be taking a look at some of these seriously disturbing emails being sent to Pensbury school board members ahead of Tuesday's election. I've got a bunch of these emails that looks like they came right to no request or so on that are absolutely, they're racist, they're anti-Semitic, they're sexist, they're violent, ways of going to intimidate school board members ahead of this election. Because masks. That's right. Pretty crazy. So we do that on Monday. On Monday the 8th, that's a week from this Monday. Monday the 8th, we're going to have Kirsten Zolfo on. She's, of course, our kind of Bucks County Indivisible. But she's like, you know, works with Indivisible statewide. And we're going to be digging into getting ready for the battle for the PA1. That's right. We've got some candidates already kind of announcing to go up against Brian Fitzpatrick in the 2022 election. And we're going to see what other kind of nonsense he's been involved in. So we'll be looking for that on Monday, November 8th. And on Monday, November 15th, we're going to be talking with Laura Putnam. Laura Putnam is a professor of history at the University of Pittsburgh. And we're going to be digging into looking at the kind of changing political dynamics around the Pittsburgh area, particularly what happened and why people left the Democratic Party and why there's a resurgence of left and socialist activism happening in that area. So tune in on the 15th for that with Laura Putnam. I want to give a special shout out to our brand new Podbean patron. Yes, Jordy3, who joined at the $5 a month level. Thank you, Jordy3. Because we want to look. We need people like Jordy 3 to step up and become a member. Yes, because we want a progressive future. You know it. We need progressive media. You can support Cold Out Punch's homegrown progressive media today. Become a patron of Raging Chicken for as little as $5 a month. You can go to patreon.com/rcpress. Or if you're listening to our podcast on Podbean, you just hit that little green button at the top of the page, right, that says become a patron or support. You can become one through Podbean too as well. Look, we're here for the fight, but we need you, right? Become a patron for the price of a good beer once a month. Help keep the media in the movement and the movement in the media. Become a patron for as little as $5 a month. Just go to patreon.com/rcpress today. Sean, man, how are you doing?
Doing great. How are you?
I'm doing better today, right? Despite the fact that you kind of blew me off in my hour of need yesterday as I was going off the rails on this climate stuff. So I thank you for that.
Yeah, no, I decided to just like stick my head in the sand figuratively and literally on this one.
You're like, it's a sunny day. Leave me alone. I want to go on walk and enjoy myself.
It was like 65 degrees out, end of October, you know, and enjoying the weather. I went out and, you know, went out for a walk on the riverfront. The river was pretty high from the nor'easter. I was actually pretty surprised.
You mean from the climate-enforced deluges that you refuse to talk about as you bury your head in the sand about them? Those ones?
Yes, those ones.
Just check it. I didn't know if that was what it was or not. I was a little confused.
I mean, it looks like fall will be here by next week, so that's good at least.
Yeah, that's
good. Or a taste of fall. So, you know.
It is good. It is good. I'm sorry. I'm a little distracted. I'm trying to adjust this freaking our little Zoom screen here, which is being a pain in my butt. Sorry. But, yeah. So, well, did you at least get a good walk in?
Yes, I did.
I mean, well, at least it was worth something, I guess.
Yes. No, it was nice out. Nice and, like, windy. It's also, like, time of year now. Like, I have to get, like, I have to look for a dehumidifier or a humidifier for my room because just like the heat is comes from a furnace. No. Like what? Those big
is that the technical cast term?
No. Like what? One of those big the steel grates.
Radiators.
Yeah, radiators. So.
Like the heat comes from a furnace.
It's not a natural source.
It's a man-made source. They pipe it right in to my apartment. And it warms me nice and toasty, but it gets me a little dry.
I was looking at you as well, but no, it's starting to get like, I actually put the heat on nighttime now. It's getting to that point of the year. So,
yeah, it's getting there. I'm gonna stop messing around with that. I keep on trying to mess around with the screen. Anyways,
yeah, you're just like, yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, it's almost like, you know, when you are just kind of like fascinated with Twitter and you're like, don't hear a word I'm saying. It's kind of like that right now, except it's kind of flipped around.
Exactly.
Anyways, well, the good thing about having the podcast today is because you can't avoid my phone call now to talk about the Build Back Better.
David Dan's Build Back Less.
So, okay, let me just say this. Let me kind of like, I'm curious kind of what your take is on some of this stuff. But all week. I mean, if you listen to me on Out the Coop Live on Monday, first of all, I apologize to everybody because I was freaking like just at one of my lowest levels, right, on all this stuff. Right? I was feeling depressed. I was feeling cynical. I was feeling all that kind of stuff. And I felt like,
and that's exactly why I was not entertaining.
Well, exactly. Yesterday. Right. You know, and I know for those folks who tuned in Monday, I know I brought the room down. Right. You know, so I get it. I was really frustrated and upset about was when it comes in particular with climate, right? So looking at this Build Back Better bill and just, you know, seeing that you've got like literally two people, Right. Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema just wrecking, just coming with, just being wrecking balls at a time. Like, because look, let's be clear. This is probably going to be the last bite of the apple we get for serious climate mitigation that is going to have any kind of positive or progressive possibility. And it's a crisis. I mean, I read the reports that came out earlier this year ahead of COP26, and it's worse than the one in 2018. 2018, people were freaking, their hair was on fire. They couldn't believe that all the scientists were saying, nope, we have less time than we thought. This one came out and said, no, we have less time than we thought last time. Right. And so we got to go all in. And it was like this slow motion wrecking ball of them destroying some of the most important climate mitigation strategies that we could have as part of this Build Back Better bill. And then on top of that, right, I think what put me over the edge, right, that wasn't bad enough. On top of that, everything that polls the highest, that is the most popular, and is the thing that would kind of get Democrats elected again, was removed from the bill.
Like, they paid family leave.
Free college, free community college, paid family leave, right? The expanded Medicare, although they get hearing aids, but no vision, no dental, right? They didn't make the child tax credit permanent, like hugely like thing. They've only extended it for 1 year, which means it's going to have to be fought over again, probably with a Republican Congress. Right. I mean, it's just it was hard. But now, having said that, and after getting over my I can't tell you how many different podcasts I shut off, TVs I shut off, like articles I threw across the room, right, this week when I was listening to some of the nonsense that was coming out, when everybody wanted to say like, oh, this is great, this is good. They're doing the cheerleading for how amazing this bill is. And I'm just like,
and like just joker pilled.
Yeah, just kind of like, you know, somebody, you know, all of a sudden they're kind of like got the PR talking points being pumped into their brains. Right. And then they're like, oh, this is great. No, it's not bad. No, I know it was 6 trillion and then it went down to 3.5 and that was the compromise. But now we're half of that. I know that, but this is awesome. Transformative, world exploding, better than FDR and Johnson put together. I mean, I have so little. I don't have like the Democratic Party fan gear. That's not me. I don't walk around with my blue hoodie with Democrats on it, right? So I'm not lining up to cheer for my team here, okay? That's just not how I approach politics, right? So when I see the cheerleaders start coming out, when they're like, yay, we got some shit, we got, you know, and that's it, it gets a little frustrating.
It's also like, well, no, I mean, and then like the electoral ramifications this will just have, because like we just went so small. Like, I mean, the apathy, you want to drive apathy, like, and just like tamp down your own, like, people who got Biden elected. And okay, here we go. Like, you know what I mean?
That I know exactly what you mean.
And just like, yeah, I mean, the fact we're going to work to get these people elected in 2022 and 2024, like, it's going to put a damper on things. Like, it's going to make things harder. Like, you know what I mean? Just like doing this. Yeah.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah. So, I mean.
And so, yeah, that's the concern. I mean, that's, you know, that's like the secondary concern, right? You know, and I think we have to accept the fact that we're not going to learn, right? I mean, I think we're just going to have to accept the fact
that we're not doing anything to stop, like, you know, the building authoritarian fascist movement on the right wing right now. It's kind of just like, you know, going to be taking over school board positions next week. Like,
well, we'll see. Like I said, I have a lot more hope with some of the organizing that's happening at the school board level than I do at the national level. That's for sure.
Yeah,
I mean, and I think that local organizing, and we've been talking about this for a long time, and local organizing really is ultimately going to be what's going to matter over the long haul.
Yeah,
but you know, but it's just one of those things, Sean. It's like, I mean, you could see the train coming, right? Or the train wreck coming, I guess. Right? Because if you've campaigned, you know, this is the politics end of it. This is kind of not even at the, you know, okay, what we actually need. Because what we actually need right now versus what the politics are very, very different worlds. Right? We got like this climate, you know, the climate stuff in the bill. Now, again, the majority of the money in this, I don't know if I would say the majority of it, but it's like, what is it? It's about $555 billion of this is going to go to kind of mitigating the climate crisis, right? And that is, this is accurate and this is true when Biden says that is an unprecedented investment in that. That's absolutely true. We have never seen that kind of money before. However, the amount and the how are problems, right? One is that when the scientists come out of it, when they kind of do the calculation of what's going to be needed to actually turn our infrastructure over and to what kind of investments are needed in our electricity grid and stuff like that, that's not even close. It's a drop in the bucket, right? So that's one. The second thing is the how. The bulk of that money is in tax credits. Right. It's try to incentivize people to do the right thing. And again, that's the wrong model. I'm sorry. I mean, we've got the electric car initiative, but we're not going to get to climate mitigation through electric cars or individuals choosing to put solar panels on their roof. That's not going to happen. Is it necessary? Is it part of it? Absolutely. But yeah, those tax credits.
It has to be transformative.
You know, this is the mindset where, and this, you know, I'll talk about this in the last call today, but Kay Aronoff has been great on this for a long time. And, you know, I have followed her writing for quite some time. And her book, Overheated, came out recently. And I haven't had a chance to read it yet, but I'm reading it now. And she is so freaking dead on, right? About, you know, this kind of the problem where we're at right now, right? This kind of the way of approaching these things. And again, it's similar to what Naomi Klein argued in This Changes Everything, that, you know, this kind of like half measures and kind of like tax incentives and hoping corporations do the right thing. It's just not going to cut it. And unfortunately, we have leadership in the Democratic Party, right? I mean, Republicans are a lost cause. Let's be clear about that. They're at an absolute lost cause. Every single one of those people voted against, right, this bill. So let's be clear about that. Right. But the leadership of the Democratic Party, right, are still wedded to this model that was kind of like, you know, cemented back in the 1990s. And it's not helping us right now. So, but, you know, we should be clear. Let me just say this, because I do want to say, let's be clear about what is in this and why this is important, is that there is one, this is a big deal. Universal pre-K. That is a huge deal. Right. There's no doubt about that. Right. You have child care, universal preschool. You've got about $400 billion being kind of allocated for that. And there's, again, like all these freaking corporate Democrats, is like they have to kind of include language in there that it's going to kind of like means test crap and limit it and make it like burdensome on people. But it's still there. That expanded child tax credit. It is there, but it's only there for a year. Right. Medicaid and Affordable Care Act subsidy expansion. They're going to expand that. So say, for example, if you live in a state that because of the Republican dominated legislature just chose not to expand Medicaid, right, to cover people that needed it, this money will allow poor people to buy into Medicaid. OK, now all sorts of problems with that, but it is an expansion. Right. So it is a step in the positive way. You get a hearing benefit, but again, the vision and dental are not there. In-home care access, right? Notice the word access, right? It's not a guarantee, it's access, right? Affordable housing investment, $150 billion in affordable housing, which is a big deal, but that'll produce about 1 million homes. Worker training and higher education. Again, this is the thing that all these people get, you know, kind of get behind, and yes, is important, but it is extraordinarily like a, it's also a way of covering over what needs to be done, right? You say, oh, we're just going to retrain you. No. What we need to do is you need to actually invest in infrastructure and give people jobs, but whatever. And there's a bunch of other stuff. So that's on the positive side of the ledger, right? On the negative side of the ledger, about what was kind of cut out of there was the paid family leave, as Sean said, Medicare negotiation of drug prices, which is insane because all the economists and the kind of CBO came out and said that will actually save a ton of money, right? But that's been cut out for no good reason, because that would have raised the revenue that they were all looking for. The expanded Medicare coverage of dental and vision, that's out. That was kind of Bernie Sanders saying this is a red line, but looks like that's not going to happen. Free community college is out. The increase of the top corporate tax rate is out. Right. At the same time, there's a minimum corporate tax rate in at 15%. You remember kind of early on in the show, I think over the summer, Janet Yellen was kind of hawking this globally about having a minimum corporate tax globally, right, as an agreement, so to stop the race for the bottom. So this is kind of like built into this is Yellen making that commitment, you know, Yellen making that or, you know, putting that in here to make that commitment to meet Yellen's goals. So there's some good stuff and some bad stuff. And so, you know, I think Harold Meyerson was saying in the American Prospect, which kind of got me down off my ledge a little bit. I was saying, like, look, if this was coming as a clean bill now and it was going to pass, this would be something to celebrate. And I get that. But everyone who's even looking at the positives here always has to follow with but, right? Especially when it comes to climate stuff, it's just simply insufficient. Right. And I think with the point that Sean's bringing up is actually, you know, it's a political liability now. Right. If that you're promising people, here's what we can do. And you've given people a taste of what that horizon looks like, that possible future. And then you basically say, just kidding, or it was too hard or something like this. And, you know, again, this is politics. So part of it has to do with your affect. I mean, part of it has to do with how you approach it. It may be true because, look, Biden does not have the majorities that, you know, FDR had or Johnson had, right? I mean, it's got a, you know, 50% threshold here. I mean, you're talking about an evenly split Senate. So, you know, there's going to be compromises going into this. However, it's your tone and your affect and how you approach it. And if people detect that you're full of bullshit and you're just trying to get them to try to convince them that, no, actually, your eyes deceive you. This is actually the best thing in the world, then people are going to know it's bullshit. And that's going to affect people's willingness to come out and support you. Right? And where are we going to feel it? We're going to feel it first in the midterms in 2022. So, anyways, I don't know if you got anything else on this, Sean, but it's like, you know, I just wanted to get that up front. So,
No, I've not been paying attention to this week. I did not want to, like, get depressed.
Yeah,
this stuff, but
yeah, I hear it. Well, the best thing to do is to ignore it. That's what I've heard, that's what I've told.
Yes,
told.
Exactly.
You just ignore
if
it,
you just block it out, like, and just not pay attention and just act like it's not even there.
Yeah, it's better. That's what Dungeons and Dragons does for me. You know, it basically keeps me away. It's keeping me away from like a 24 hours of news. It's basically what it comes down to. But, you know,
just like pure existential, like, dread and all, like, you know.
Yeah. That kind of stuff, you know. I tend to enjoy it. Makes for good storylines as you're designing D&D campaigns. I'm just saying. Anyways, like I said, COP26 coming out on Halloween. That's going to get started up there. We've got the G20 kind of ahead of this. So that's all going to be breaking over the next couple of weeks. Did you catch any of the big oil testimony, or was that part of the stick head in sand part? Or
I did not even know.
Okay, just curious.
I didn't even know that was happening this week.
Lord, help me. If Sean goes, there's nobody. I'm all alone.
No, I was focusing on like state stuff this week.
No, Sean's got a bunch of stuff on that score too as well. So,
yeah.
Yeah, I'll just say one thing that, you know, this is something.
I mean, it's also, I will say this. I mean, I feel like I've just like checked out from this stuff at just from like last year and all. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I don't know.
Oh, I know what you mean.
I mean, like, all the bullshit that went on, like, with. Yeah, I've just checked out.
Well, I could say one of the things that two things I just want to say about the big oil stuff too as well. I've only caught clips of that. I do want to go back and watch some of the testimony. But you talk about there's a lot of stuff going on. And I think that Kate Aronoff said this well in her recent piece in New Republic, where it was saying that, look, you know who was at those committee hearings about big oil, right? Kind of basically lefty environmental journalists, like primarily, right? And some folks from the major papers, just because there's so freaking much happening, that, you know, stuff that would have been kind of front and headline news is just, you know, that got kind of pushed way down. And, but basically say, you know, there's going to be a lot more coming out about this. And the way I look at that is, like, number one, like kudos to, Carolyn Maloney, right? And I know that she's not always on the kind of the left end of the spectrum and things like, but kudos to her for demand or wanting to send out subpoenas, and kudos to Ro Khanna for getting this thing kind of thing really kind of motivated and going, and basically holding these people accountable and getting them on record, right? Because you remember what happened at you know, this has been likened to what happened with the tobacco industry. And I agree, it's right. There's a bunch of people that have been kind of raining on that parade, saying, no, this is not the same. But you got to remember is when tobacco industry came and they gave their testimony, right? What made that so important is the fact that in the long run, it was shown that they were lying. Like under oath, right? And that's where the stuff kind of goes. And now the documents are already here on the big oil stuff. So now, and we've got a climate crisis. This is going to be really interesting going forward. So that's, I'll be kind of definitely be following that kind of going forward. And the other piece by Molly Taft and Emily Atkin, there's going to be links in today's show notes. Definitely check this out. It's really fascinating. And it just shows you like what horrible institutions big oil is, right? If you don't know that already, right? Is that so they basically target all these insider newsletters that go out to folks with inside the Beltway and political circles and just poured a ton of money into ads on those newsletters. So ahead of these hearings. So like, for example, Punch Bowl, if you don't know Punch Bowl circulates kind of inside the Beltway, right? Very kind of like, you know, the TikTok of legislation and all this stuff. 63% of Punch Bowl user newsletters or 30 out of the 48 of them were sponsored by fossil fuel interest. 100% of Politico's morning energy newsletters, 15 out of 15, were sponsored by fossil fuel interests. And 62% of Axios's Generate newsletters, or 10 out of 16, were sponsored by fossil fuel interests, right? And they had big block ads all throughout them too as well. So definitely check that out. You just can kind of see that. It's one of these things that's actually, I think, very, very useful when you're having conversations with people too as well, to show you what they're actually doing, right? To try to pull the wool over people's eyes. So there's that. Good to see also that Andrew Cuomo is kind of going out. That's good. I was happy about that.
I didn't realize he was going to get charged.
Yeah, well, apparently neither did he and neither did his victim. It's like, this is like, you know, I see this through the lens of growing up in New York State, right? Almost corrupt for the political systems that you can have out there. Like literally the charges came out and then everybody kind of looked around to each other, like the lawyers and everything, like, wait, this wasn't supposed to happen until next week.
It's like the Spider-Man gif. Like everyone just pointing the fingers at each other.
Totally. I'm like, what? And like I said to you before the show, it's like, yeah, this is kind of a classic example. Somebody that wanted to make sure that Cuomo could not get out in front of a PR thing, and he didn't give a crap who they hurt. Right. So, because even like the victim in this case was like, whoa, and had to kind of like, you know, get up. So that was something, but that's going to happen. And he's brought up on charges to misdemeanor charge, but could face like up to a year in prison, which he probably won't because he's the freaking elitist.
But still, he's going, getting charged. But
he's getting charged. Yep. And there's going to be, it's like, you know, yeah. It's going to be great. And for a
can we use the mugshot?
What's that?
The mugshot? Will there be a mugshot?
That's what I want to see. Yes. I'll get that t-shirt. Right there. I'm gonna get that design now. Actually, the Cuomo mugshot t-shirt. I love it. Cool. If you haven't seen this, been going on too as well. Harvard University graduate students are in their day three of their strike. It's like, it's great to see, you know, again, this is the end of Striketober, right? But could it be Strikevember continuing? I think so.
Whatchamacallit? Philadelphia transit workers might be going on strike. SEPTA workers next week.
No, that's what I just said at the beginning of the show. That was in the intro. They got a contract this morning.
Oh, they did? Okay.
Yeah, they agreed on a thing. See, this is what I'm saying. Sean just really doesn't listen. Right? Even if he's looking at this, looking kind of generally your direction, he's really not looking at you, right? this is why Zoom has been so great for Sean. Because he can pretend, but not really. Because, you know, in Zoom, you're not really always looking in the cameras. So you don't really know anyway. So it's like a little thing you got going on there. I get it.
I was looking at the Okay.
Phillies scores or?
No, I'm looking at the notes.
I'm just joking. It's not in the notes.
Okay.
It's not in the notes because I said it at the end. I forgot to put it in notes, but I mentioned it there. But yeah, because this just broke this morning.
Okay.
That they were ready to go because everyone was getting really concerned. You know, schools and things were trying to make it like plans. And they have at least a tentative agreement today. We'll see what that plays out. Because
they are a union that does go on strike. That's known for going on strike and consistently going on strike.
Yep.
I actually was in high school when they were on strike once, which was interesting to say the least.
Yeah. Well, and here's a couple of the things that they're demanding in the contract, which they got like in this thing. And so again, here's the reason. If you compare what happened is Build Back Better, right? And here's a union, right? What about the union? They got paid family leave in the contract, and they got Juneteenth as a paid holiday, right? Where two of these kind of key, plus in addition to, you know, protection of benefits and increased wages, right? So, I mean, I don't know all the details of it, but that's what I saw reported on it this morning. So freaking A.
And they did a ton of work last year.
Yeah.
Through the pandemic, so
exactly. And if you're gonna say after everything that they did like last year, if you, and they're sit there, is SEPTA gonna try to fight them on this? You're not gonna, you know, those workers are not gonna cave. Sorry. So cool. The other thing. So you got to see those Harvard University graduate students that they're on strike day three of their strike. And the coolest thing is yesterday, and I assume today too as well. Undergraduates walked out of classes and joined the picket lines.
Oh, and then Marty Walsh, the labor secretary, was at the Kellogg strike in Lancaster this past week.
Nice, nice, nice.
The first time a labor secretary has ever walked a picket line in the country's history, or the history of that office.
I wonder if he's using Obama's unused pair of shoes to walk on that picket line. That's awesome. That's freaking fantastic. That's what we want to see.
So
fantastic. And Facebook changed its name to Meta, right? Why? Because it's getting all the slack because of the whistleblower, right? So it's just going to try to do the kind of like, you know, switcheroo thing. Oh, you know, we're not Google anymore. We're ABC kind of thing, right?
We're not Blackwater. We're Z.
right. Exactly. We're going to change our name 4 or 5 times. You don't know who we are. No, we didn't kill 17 people in open daylight. No. That wasn't us. That was Blackwater. We're not Blackwater. We're this other, you know, that kind of thing. That's crazy. But the other thing, that I don't know if you saw this online, but there was like a preview of this virtual reality world that Facebook wants to launch. Did you see this week?
No, I did not.
Dude, it's really science fiction freaky, right? So they basically have it like they have this, and of course, freaking like Zuckerberg's got to appear in his own commercial. Right. So he goes up to a wall and there's a kind of an avatar of himself. Right. And he's like, oh, what do I wear? And he's like, presses on the thing, he switches things. Okay, now I'm going to join my friends. And then the screen turns around and now he's in his virtual world.
So it's like a Sims, like.
Yeah, except you're in your VR stuff, right? It's VR Sims, basically.
Yeah, like that.
Yeah, it's freaking. I'm telling you, this is what they think is going to be the most important thing to do right now. So, and that's, of course, called Metaverse. How on brand with their new name, Meta, right? See, Facebook's not a company, just a product, Sean. Meta's the company. So how meta is that? Right, crazy.
Yeah.
Anyways, and then we've got the horrible, like having.
It's just like fucking insane. Yeah. Did you see the thread that Will Bunch put together on this judge?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Freaking okay. Awesome. So, yes. So like, I feel like with some context, like this judge is an extreme right winger and has been like this for like 30 years now and has a like just a fucking little bunch put a thread about how crazy this guy is on online. But you know, the fact that like the people that Rittenhouse killed can't be called victims is just like insane.
Yeah, I just want you to know that just real quick Mike Gambone just wanted, you know, to know that when you didn't know about the SEPTA strike, he just wrote in the chat, said, come on, Sean. Thanks, Mike, for the backup. I appreciate it. Anyways, go ahead. I didn't mean to interrupt.
But no, like the, watching this story with Kyle Rittenhouse is just like, pretty insane, but expected, I guess.
Yeah, it is. And then, you know, I'm so glad. I mean, Will Bunch has been on fire this week, by the way. I mean, he's just been like on Twitter. He's just, you can see he's had it like this week too, as well. So I felt at least a little bit vindicated there. But yeah, his thread on that judge was fantastic. It was like, okay, it got up to speed on that, especially as you see these, you know, unapologetic Nazis going on here. Did you also see the story? I'm just going to forget the guy's name, but is like the other kind of guy was at January 6th who is basically recanting his, you know, commitment for Trump and is trying to get like trying to plea out of it. And he basically was talked a little bit. He's trying to get protection and he actually begged to go into solitary confinement to get separated from the rest of the January 6th people who are in prison. Did you hear about that?
No, I did not hear about that.
Well, this is fascinating because, you know, you talk about jail as a kind of radicalizing possibility, especially among white supremacists. That seems what's happening. They have a wing that's called the J6 wing, right, of the prison, you know, they're, you know, colloquially named.
So it's just
that.
Like Akron Asylum, like the Akron Asylum wing of the fucking joint.
Basically, right? So this guy, I wish I had thought about putting this in the notes because this was fascinating. So he's basically on trial and he's like, look, oh, yeah, he's the guy who dug up, who took the police, the badge from one of those officers that was getting beaten and buried it in his backyard. You remember this?
No, I don't.
No, okay. So anyways, they dug up the badge, right, and everything like this, and he's basically recanting, saying like, oh, blah, 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 you know, I was duped or whatever, you know, whatever you want to say for that. But in that, he's saying that when he get on the phone with his lawyer, right, and they all suspected that he was not on board with the insurrection as much as he was before, so they would just start singing at the top of their lungs like the Star Spangled Banner, right? Singing the national anthem and all this, and they're like doubling down on, you know, the right wing extremism and white supremacy. So yeah, these six folks are not going away, and they are not kind of like apologetics.
No, I think here in Harrisburg people aren't realizing, like Sandy Weyer, she came out of the woodwork again. This is the lady that got was inside the Capitol and you know, was the one who instigated the attack against the New York Times photographer in that stairwell. She showed up to a rally in Harrisburg a few weeks ago, and then she was pictured with Scott Perry at the Dillsburg Halloween parade a couple weeks ago. Like, yeah, so I mean, these people aren't going away and they're still emboldened. And the fact that she's getting photos out there with Scott Perry, like right now, just like is, I mean, it just shows you where these people are at. So,
exactly,
I mean, Scott Perry ain't backing down. I mean, he might become the leader of the Freedom Caucus.
Well, and that's why you're the campaign manager for the Scott Perry for Prison 2020.
Yeah,
absolutely crazy, crazy. All right, man. You got anything else you want to throw in before we hit to the PA focus?
No, nothing too much.
All right, cool. All right, so we're going to kind of make sure that that Sean doesn't get too depressed. So we're going to go to a little bit of break here. And we'll kind of talk about some happy things maybe on the other side. Or not. So anyways, this is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken. Thank you all for tuning in. I want to remind you, you can help support this show by becoming a patron for as little as $5 a month. Just go to patreon.com/rcpress. Or as a reminder, if you're listening to this on the Podbean app, right, through the Podbean app, you can hit that little green patron button at the top, and you can also support us through there, like Jordy3 did this week. So thank you for the new membership there. This is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken. We will be right back after this. Oh, I hit the wrong one. I'm sorry. Here's so much for Come On, Sean. This is like, come on, Kevin. This is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken. We'll be right back.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 1975. That was the day that the National Organization for Women, or NOW, called for a strike by women across the nation. They called the day Alice Doesn't Day. This referred to a critically acclaimed movie by the director Martin Scorsese that came out the year before, entitled Alice Doesn't Live Here Anymore. The main character in the film is Alice Height, who pursues her dream of being a singer after she is widowed. The film was lauded by feminists as a story of women's empowerment. now used the film title and asked women to participate with the slogan, "Alice doesn't, you fill in the blank." Women were encouraged to participate in the day however they could, including refraining from volunteering, shopping, and if possible, working for one day to demonstrate their importance to the economy. Women who could not skip work were asked to wear armbands to show their solidarity with the cause. In an interview published in the Chicago Tribune, now President Karen DeCroo explained, quote, "There is a myth that women in the workforce could go home, but if they did, our economy would stop. If all the secretaries did not come to work, all things would stop." But not all women were excited about the day. Some anti-feminist women decided to protest the day by wearing pink, baking cookies, and performing other stereotypical female tasks. While now called the event a success, Time magazine deemed it a spectacular failure. One critique was that the event reflected the white middle-class dominance of the women's movement. Working-class women, and especially women of color, had a much more difficult time withholding their labor. Labor History in 2 brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show. For more information, go to laborhistoryin2.com.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back. Welcome back. This is Kev Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken, here once again with Sean Kitchen, campaign manager for Scott Perry for Prison 2022. So, Sean, man, it's been it seems like it's been a little bit of a busier week this week out there in Harrisburg, but also around the state. There's been tons of activity around there. So where do you want to jump off to?
I guess we can start off at the top with the governor's race that's going to be happening next year.
Indeed. Like, well, this week, you know, I think, my little, like, what threw me for, just kind of like, really? It was really more of this kind of like, are you?
I think it was unforced. I think it was an unforced error with Shapiro's office. I don't know.
Well, we shall see. But look, you know, it's like, what it seemed to me is like there's several things that were going on, right? So you got Josh Shapiro. For those folks who didn't know, didn't see this already, right? Josh Shapiro basically was a story that broke in the AP, right? Mark Levy kind of had this posted in the AP that basically Shapiro is distancing himself from Governor Tom Wolf's climate mitigation plans, in particular his decision to join the Regional Greenhouse Gas Initiative, or REGI, right? And so, you know, he floats this stuff out there like, there's a problem there. So on the one hand, he says his office comes out and says that, oh, yes, we have to kind of make sure that we have a kind of strict plan of, you know, climate mitigation. And the same time, he's going to say he's going to undercut what the commitments that Tom Wolf has made. Right. Now, remember, for the long time, the Pennsylvania had not joined that. Right. So it was a new decision to join that, to become part of the solution as opposed to part of the problem. And so his campaign comes out and basically tells people that, you know, he's not on board. And the fact that that drops like less than a week before COP26 begins. Right. And some of the Build Back Better thing is going on right now in Congress. Right. Where people are saying, like, looking at climate mitigation stuff to signal that you want to go. Let's be clear here. Tom Wolf's.
I don't even think it's the timing of that stuff's important. I think it's more or less the timing, like a week after your campaign starts, pretty much. Like, this is like one of the first major things that comes out. It's just like, this is not the direction to be going in with climate right now. It's just like, and it shouldn't be like the first major thing. I mean, we'll see what happens, but.
No, but I do think it matters, because I'll tell you why it matters, right? Because, you know, Pennsylvania is going, like, the governor's race in Pennsylvania is going to be a national race, like it or not. People are going to be watching it, especially because what happened during the last two election cycles, right? For presidential election cycles. So people are already paying attention. And Shapiro has gone out of his way to give himself a national name. I'm not faulting him for that. I mean, I think he's been doing really good stuff in terms of his campaign. What he's been doing as attorney general has been very positive in many ways. Right. So that's just it. Why I think that this was especially bad timing, right, is because people. So, like, for example, where did that story get picked up? Right. I mean, so that's published in San Francisco Gate. That's been published in kind of like The Guardian, picked up on this, some of this stuff. It's getting played. It's getting paid attention to precisely because people are focused on climate stuff right now.
And
so
also
that's what I mean about the timing stuff.
Yeah. No, there's that. I mean,
I just think, like, you know, look, we just have to look. My only reason to even bring this up is, like, let's kind of a version of what I was saying at the beginning, right? Let's just not get on just our let's not get our team sport mentality in here, right? Yeah. That we need to have pressure on Shapiro or anybody who runs for governor, anybody who runs for Senate, to make sure that we're holding their feet to the fire, to do what we need to do.
And just because there's no primary, or, you know, the primary field is clear, does not mean there will not be accountability for this stuff. I mean, like, we have to do something with climate change, and we can't have someone just throwing their hands in the air, taking a wait and see approach.
Right, right, exactly. So, and that's just got to be a clear message that we're going to give to Shapiro early on, right? So that's, you know, one of the reasons why I just was kind of like tweeting stuff out at him, right, as campaign, like, immediately, and other people were too as well. It's not to say, like, oh, okay, he's just a big phony, whatever. No, it's, we need to get the pressure needs to be there from day one. We don't give him a pass because he's got a D next to his name. That's all I'm saying. That's all I'm saying. But on the other end of the aisle, it looks like we've got like another contender.
Yes. So this is actually pretty funny. I think this also has a little bit to do with some of the fun I had this week. So Senator Cornyn is beginning his like campaign for governor. He's going to be ramping it up over the next couple of weeks. He met with Pennsylvania congressional Republicans at the Hill Club, or the Capitol Hill Club down in D.C. a couple weeks ago. That was picked up by Brad Bumstead earlier in the week. So it's going to be expected he's going to announce his run for governor after Election Day. What I thought was funny, there was an NRA fundraiser going on. Were you watching my Twitter account that night?
Monday? I don't think so. No.
So Monday I was live
streaming. I really need to go for a walk. I need to go for a walk and stuff like that. I didn't want to get brought down into the mire of all this stuff, right? So I just, you know, shut it down, and I went out and enjoyed myself. So
I was at my bar, Sturgis, and there was an NRA fundraiser going on upstairs. And I was end up like sitting in the corner, just like, and I start like live tweeting all the people who ended up going in there.
Nice.
And Cornyn was one of them, which was fun. So, you know, off that side tangent, one of the things I think is really interesting also came out, the Franklin Marshall Bowl came out this week, where a couple of things happened. One, that was Governor Wolf's popularity numbers actually went up, and his opposition numbers went down for the first time in a few months, which was pretty good. And then the quote unquote audit is getting, has interesting numbers, with 55% opposed and 43% in support.
Right.
And like the strongly opposed outnumbers the strong support by from 45 to 30, which is still like pretty big numbers.
That's a big deal. I mean, especially since, yeah, like, you know, you're talking about that those changes happened since what was like, what you said, March or April?
This was the first time they asked the questions for it.
Oh, I thought the audit. I was looking at that poll, and I think there was these two.
No, that was the change in Trump Republicans.
I'm sorry. Yeah. You're right. I'm getting these two things confused. My bad.
Yeah. But no, I think for like the first time that poll, having 55% be opposed to an audit is a pretty big number.
Yeah.
And one that's going to be hard to like overcome.
Yeah. Fingers crossed. And so the other thing I was, you know, said to you before, before the show today too, as well, was that, you know, what it also, I thought, gave us a decent, you know, at least barometer, a look into what's the radical minority, like what's the size of that radical minority. And, you know, and it's not insignificant, right? But it's critical that it's a minority, right?
Yeah, I know. I think like the having like the people who are more against it, having the higher number, making up pretty much like the plurality is a good sign.
Yeah, I agree. Very, very cool. And so that other one was kind of looking at the
change in like centrist Democrats and progressive Democrats.
Yeah, exactly.
You saw like people who call themselves centrist went from like 45 to like 37% over the past few months. That dropped a lot. And then those who call them progressives pretty much went in the other direction, went from like 33 to like 38. So I think you're seeing it shifting in the polarization, or like the of the party, it seems.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, I do think that some of these school board races, I think, has some impact on that, kind of seeing how people are approaching it. I know that it's been really interesting just in my area, seeing some of the shifts in how people are approaching it. There was an initial, let's call it a, say, Bucks County Democratic Party line about how to approach this through kind of reasonable and rationality and all that, you know, just kind of like be above the fray kind of stuff, the Michelle Obama move, right? And then I think, you know, groups of parents were like, that's just not cutting it. These people are getting more extreme. We need to organize. And the folks that were doing a lot of the organize were kind of progressives. And I think that that is have an impact in terms of, say, politicizing people in terms of how they think about themselves in this context, too. So that was pretty cool. On that score, too, as well, again, I won't talk about this extensively right now, but Cyril Mikulenko just dropped his new column over the Bucks County Courier-Times and the Intelligencer, looking at the Black American, all Black American flags that are flying, that are beginning to appear here and there. And I think a lot of people just don't know what they are.
Have you seen them yet?
Yeah, flying around three, right, no? In Perkasie.
Oh my God,
Sean! The so picture, you, the you, picture that he has in his, the picture that he has on his for that column is like, you know, maybe like six blocks from me.
Yeah, no, my I have a neighbor a couple blocks away from me that put one up, and it turns out he is a fucking staffer for Daryl Metcalf in the house. Yeah.
Please tell me you have pictures of that.
Let's just say that also
just to
like,
put in the file folder is all I'm saying.
I mean, yeah, I know who the guy is. I know who the staffer is. I found it kind of odd, like literally had that thing up like literally the day, like back in like January, like I don't know, or like after the election in January. You know, and you know, kind of put out a fucking like, you know, literally like a red flag into the neighborhood.
Right.
Because that got me poking around on this flag and like what it meant. And like, yeah, all of our anti-fascist friends know, like, that live in the neighborhood. It's not like we like don't live in the neighborhood. Like, you know what I mean?
Yep.
I mean, you're kind of just like throwing yourself out there. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah.
Especially in a community like this in Harrisburg, because
exactly,
you're going to draw some attention with that. And you're not going to, you know, like people are aware of this flag and like what it means and who these people are.
Yeah. And I think that, you know, I mean, in there, what I think was important, why I thought like Cyril's article was so important is because I think like out in our area, right, not a lot of people know who, I mean, I think more people know now, right, because, you know, people are starting to pay attention and watching the kind of extremism grow. But, you know, basically it's a threat. It's the no surrender flag, right? And no quarter to the enemies, right? And basically, well, we don't take prisoners, we shoot you, right? Is kind of the sense there. It is it's a symbolic kind of statement that you are willing to engage in violence, huh?
Isn't it like an old Civil War flag, or goes back? Yeah.
Yeah.
No, it's, I mean, like, we have a neighbor who has one of those appeal to heaven flags in his front window. Yeah, it's
something.
It is.
Yeah, it's something. So, so there you have it. So anyways, yeah, so those are, so we'll talk more about that on the Wednesday show next week. So do tune in, because it's going to be a worthwhile one to really hear Cyril kind of unpack some of this stuff. And from what I understand too, as well, is like that article has been blowing up, and people have been, you know, noticing more and more of these black flags that are around, especially kind of in Bucks County. So there you have it, right? This is not going away anytime soon, that's for sure. But then on the positive end of the ledger, since we go kind of back and forth here, we got some good news coming out of Philadelphia.
Yes, DSA. So, you know, 10-year anniversary of Occupy happened this fall. Someone who I met at Occupy Philly, who went on to become a DSA activist, union organizer, and he's also a public school teacher, Paul Prescord, he announced his campaign against Tony Williams, which is pretty cool. Anthony Williams is one of the largest recipients of Jeffrey Yass money and charter school money in the state. And yeah, someone's getting a like, you know, first time we're seeing someone like Tony Williams get a challenger probably like in his political career.
Yeah. And look, he's a you know, he's a powerhouse, right? I mean, he's been kind of an institution in that seat and has been virtually untouchable for the longest time too.
And there's a charter school named after his dad in that same district. Like, you know, his dad was a state senator for the longest time. Williams got $5 million from Yass back in 2010 when he tried running for governor. Got money from Yass when he was trying to run for mayor of Philadelphia. Was never able to really win any of those races or gain any traction. But yeah, this is a longtime supporter of Jeffrey, or, you know, proponent of Yass and charter school movement. And, you know, he's getting a challenge from someone who's not afraid to call himself a socialist and someone who's a public school teacher.
Yeah, and in a city where he has seen increasing success from
these same people.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So not only do you have like coming out with gonna write principles and stuff, but you actually got a cohort of people that are gonna do like boots on the ground organizing for you too as well.
Yeah.
So very cool. And speaking of Jeffrey Yass.
Yes. a bunch of news came out this week regarding the spending in the judicial races that are going on. So the Commonwealth Leaders Fund, which is funded by Jeffrey Yass, gave $1.9 million to Kevin Brobson, who is running for the Supreme Court. Brobson is a right-wing hawk, you know, probably someone who will want to overturn elections if given the chance to do that. You know, he's getting paid to do that, or he's getting funded. Pretty much all of his money came from the Leaders Fund. So what we have here that's going on is you have these organizations like the Commonwealth Leaders Fund pretty much like outsourcing these campaigns money-wise, right? Like majority of the money from, like an overwhelming majority of the money for Brobson came from this PAC. They are doing the ABBA research for Brobson. They are doing the in-kind contributions from mailers or TV ads or online ads for Brobson. And they're pretty much giving like the infrastructure and the finance support for this campaign. It's really like a different type of model they're doing this for statewide. And they're going to be doing this. They did this for Senator Dush in his run in his primary last year. They're only going to be doing this more next year. Like they are pretty much taking over the campaign arm of these races from start to finish. So, and this is all getting funded by Jeffrey Yass.
Very, very cool. Very, very cool.
And then the school boards, the other PAC that's involved with this, the Children's Choice Fund, and Students First, they gave $145,000 to the Back to School PAC, which is funding right-wing school board candidates across the state. So, more fun news.
More fun news. Gotta love it. Gotta love it. Oh, boy, oh, boy. Boy, oh, boy. We got a lot of stuff going on. A lot of stuff going on. Yeah, cool. So anything else?
Happy thoughts.
Yeah, happy thoughts. I was like, you know, I have...
happy thoughts ahead of next week's elections. You know, I mean, in Harrisburg, I didn't even put this in the notes, but we're watching like a really cynical and like racist bullshit write-in campaign happening from Papenfuss. Like they put out these placards, like these little signs as Eric Papen, like Mayor Papenfuss, the right choice for mayor. And a lot of people are getting, you know, from a distance, kind of looks a little different, you know. With
right
the,
rhymes with white.
Yeah. There's like that going on. There are text messages going out there trying to dissuade Wanda Williams supporters from voting, like really doing like voter suppression and stuff. And, you know, attacking community members on their Facebook pages. Papenfuss put out an ad this week I thought was great. You don't have to like me to vote for me, which is just like.
Hi, I'm a horrible human being. But that shouldn't matter for your vote.
Yeah, so this is where we're at. I mean, I'm just waiting for this campaign to be over. Hopefully Wanda wins, but we'll see.
Yeah, well, I know here, that's why I definitely want to close out this this segment with, you know, that kind of appeal once again to make sure that you are voting. Make sure that you are, if you have a mail-in ballot, do not mail that ballot in anymore, where you need to go and put it in a drop box, right? Make sure that you get that vote in ASAP. Make a commitment to get that done this weekend at the very latest. I know here in Bucks County, all the public libraries, or at least I think all of them, but at least most of them, the public libraries have drop boxes where you could bring them. There's one right here in Perkasie, right? There's one, say, you could bring it to the courthouse and your county courthouse instead, even up to election day, but it has to be in by the second, right? So you got to make sure that you get there. You want to hand deliver that now. There's no way you can mail it in and have it get there in time. So if you do that, if you are, do not request a mail-in ballot, you're going to vote in person, make your plan. Make sure you have your plan to vote now to get out there to the polls and vote. I can tell you right now that there's the good news is that on the ground here in Bucks County, they have been canvassing, they've been doing door-to-door. They have a lot of people on the ground going out and knocking doors in support of the Pennridge United candidates. That, you know, we have four-year terms on the school board, Pennridge school board here, and 1 2-year term because somebody just left. That's all at stake right now. So you're talking about up to 5 candidates, right? And in a school board, which has been becoming increasingly more extreme. So the fact that you've got organizers that are out there knocking on doors and get people to vote is absolutely essential, right? So we're just doing our little part here too as well to make sure, if you're within the sound of my voice, if you're in Pennridge School District, make sure you're voting. But if you're anywhere in Bucks County, if you're anywhere across the state of Pennsylvania, make sure you're voting. Because it's not just the school boards, it's also the state Supreme Court that's at stake here. You also have like mayoral races. You also have county commissioner races that people need to get out there and support right now. It's one thing to say like, the Democrats, Republican, blah, blah. It's a whole different ball game we're playing in right now. We're talking about trying to at least stave off really right-wing extremism that's threatening violence in our communities. So it is time to make sure that you are getting out to vote, that you're planning to vote. And if you have that mail-in ballot, make sure you're going to a drop box and putting it in a drop box. Election day is Tuesday, November 2nd. Right. So let's make sure that we get a full court press. Make sure you talk to your neighbors and make sure people are getting out there to vote. Right. Talk to your neighbors. If you know you got neighbors that are on the right, maybe you don't talk to them. Like, you don't want to do the work for them. That's all I'm saying. Right. You want to talk to the neighbors that you know you're going to get out to vote. Right. Don't be shy. Right. Just get them out. Right. Don't be shy.
That's good campaign advice.
That's all I'm saying, right? You want to talk to, somebody else wanted to be clear what we're saying here. I just want to say, like,
talk to the ones who you know are going to vote the right way.
Exactly. You know, those other ones, by the way, I'm just saying out of respect for those kind of right wingers.
Tell them, day is November 3rd. I'm joking.
Yeah, yeah, right. No.
Did you see that, though, coming out from Berks County?
Yes.
That's just, yeah.
Targeting Latinos.
Yes.
Yep. Yeah, I mean, it's bad. But all I'm saying is this. Those your friends of yours who are kind of Republicans or on the right, they really think that personal responsibility is the most important thing. And the last thing that you want to do is to interfere with their ability to carry out their own personal responsibility, right? So they want to do that. So, yeah. We, however, believe we're in a community, we're in a collective, and we're kind of strongest when we work together. So we're gonna exercise that. You don't want to step on their values. So just don't talk to them, because you don't want to kind of infringe upon their values. Let them take their own personal responsibility. But make sure that anybody who's progressive, is a Democrat, who's going to vote for the right people, right? I don't care if they're Republican. If they're going to vote for the right people and you know they're going to vote for the right people, make sure they're getting out there to vote. Anyways, done with the preaching. This is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken. We're going to be back right after this with this week's Last Call. We'll see you in a minute. This is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. For the past 7 years, Raging Chicken Press has brought pull no punches, progressive reporting, and commentary to the interwebs. Our long-form investigative pieces, stories that no access journalist wants to touch, or rollicking weekly podcasts strive to advance progressive movements and perspectives rooted in the struggles happening across the country or down the street.
we've broken national stories and caused our share of discomfort in the halls of power. If we want a progressive future, we need progressive media. And you can help support Pull No Punches, homegrown progressive media today. Become a member of Raging Chicken Press for as little as $5 a month. Simply go to patreon.com/rcpress and choose your membership level. We need to make sure to keep the movement in the media and the media in the movement. Best way you can do that is to become a member of Raging Chicken today by going to patreon.com/rcpress. Thank you for your energy, your encouragement, and your support. Keep up the fight. Welcome back. This is Kev Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken, here with Sean Kitchen with this week's Last Call. Well, we just talk about, you know, fun stuff, things that we kind of like, happening in culture and stuff, and things like that. As I mentioned at the top of the show, you know, my book recommendation of the week is going to be Kay Aronoff's book, Overheated. It is, first of all, just a fantastic book. And given the fact that we've got, you know, COP26 beginning and climate issues are kind of front and center right now. It's a great book to be reading. She does, you know, in some ways it picks up where Naomi Klein's book left off in some ways, right? So, I mean, the book is called Overheated, How Capitalism Broke the Planet and How We Fight Back. So if you recall in Naomi Klein's book, This Changes Everything, she, you know, basically says, look, the climate crisis happened at the same time, was like the worst possible timing, at the same time that you saw the rise of neoliberalism. Right. And so Klein really kind of like shows that, makes that case, shows what's going on, digs into a whole bunch of stuff. And there's some of that kind of what Kay Aronoff is doing here too as well, except she brings it up like literally right through the pandemic. And she's even dug in deeper on kind of like the arguments that are being made, the problems in the Democratic Party that need to be rectified if we're going to be able to do a kind of deal with the climate crisis. And, you know, she's kind of the pulls no punches. And if you've read any of her work before, you know that she pulls no punches, that she's basically goes right after the kind of neoliberal consensus and basically, look, capitalism is incapable of resolving this, right, in its own terms. And it's a fantastic book. It felt like I was with a kindred spirit this week, and it made me, you know, kind of grounded me a little bit as I was kind of like going off the rails myself with all the craziness going on. So definitely highly recommended. It's Kay Aronoff's book, Overheated. I'll have a link in today's show notes. The other thing is that I forgot, Sean, did you ever play D&D or did you never play D&D?
No, I never played D&D.
Oh, that's right. Catholic school. They probably threatened you that you were going to go to devil or something like that, right?
No, I just never played any of that stuff. Growing up, I was in scouts and then I played football.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah.
Anyways, for those of you out there, so here's the thing. So this is, I thought this is like fascinating, is that as you've heard me say on the show, like it's been one of the things that's kind of like helped me of late. I've been watching this show called The Dungeon Run, and they just had their 100th episode this past week, and I actually caught up. Like I caught up to 100 episodes, and each one of these episodes, I'm not ashamed to say, is about 3 to 4 hours long, right? So I've put in about 380 hours worth of watching this thing. And usually like I have it on in the background as I'm kind of working on stuff that I don't need to, right? So anyways. So, and it's kind of brought me back, and I said, you know, one of the kind of creative outlets I have is just to kind of like start designing some campaigns for my kids because they showed some interest in it. That's really what sparked all this stuff out, is that my kids have friends that are starting to play it now. And they asked if we could do it. I'm like, oh, this is awesome. Because of course I have this bunch of materials. But one of the things that I noticed, and it was kind of like nagging on me about how I was going to handle some of the issues, because in Dungeons and Dragons is that one of the first things that you do when you're picking a character, you're designing a character, you have to pick a race, right? And so whether you're a dwarf or you're an elf or you're all this, and each one of those races has these kind of like characteristics, right, that are consistent with this race. And, you know, I kept on thinking, you know, obviously when I was playing it when I was younger, you know, I wasn't as kind of aware of these issues as I am now. And so I thought about, I was like, well, you know, what if I don't want to do that, right? What if, I mean, I don't like those characters. And when I was watching the dungeon run, they don't say this stuff explicitly, right? They don't talk about this stuff like politics and culture stuff like explicitly. But I began to notice that they it's embedded in the game themselves, like how they're doing it, is that they actually have, they actually, oh, Emily says, like, a 16-year-old has a D&D group. That's awesome. Well, Emily, I would definitely, if your 16-year-old doesn't know about this already, definitely tell them about this. And I could share some other resources too as well, which we're probably going to be talking about on some special shows coming up too as well. Anyways, so what I noticed on the dungeon run is that there's these characters that were not following these kind of like rigid kind of racial trait stuff. Right. And I was like, oh, good. Cause I was like, how do I get around this? I don't like the fact that you're going to assign this stuff, especially in a context, you know, after the kind of George Floyd killing, after Black Lives Matter. But we know that the way that we think about race is kind of important. And the campaign that I'm designing is actually about, right, some of the crap that we see in this kind of right-wing, you know, this right-wing stuff about kind of like this cementing of using race to divide, all this other kinds of stuff. It's all kind of built into the storylines and stuff anyways. But, and so I started like just poking around a little bit about this. And it turns out like with Black Lives Matter after the George Floyd killing, these D&D communities kind of like, it was a huge active discussion about exactly these issues around race. And Dungeon Dragons, the publishers of Dungeon Dragons themselves, Wizards of the Coast, right? This is the book. They basically put out this compendium, right, called Tasha's Cauldron of Everything, right? And it was their attempt to put out, to basically change the way we think about kind of race, or at least provide rules and tools that will kind of like give you the option to do something differently, right? And I said, oh, that's really cool. So I picked up a copy of that and kind of started just starting on that. And then there's this, all these folks in the community, particularly people of color, people who play this and people of color, started saying things like, wait a minute, that's not good enough, right? We need to go beyond that. So there's these other like free compendiums that are being released, like that are free and kind of open. Some of them are kind of are, you know, like $5 or something like this, which completely kind of like undermine the way that kind of race is kind of being dealt with within this game. And it's like fascinating. So I have those two as well. And it's been super, super helpful. And why I'm even spending time talking about that right now is like, well, one, because yes, this is something that's like, you know, I'm doing right now and I'm finding fun and it's enjoyable and I get to draw maps and things and it's really cool. But on the other side of it, is that we saw like on the right wing, right? The right wing has really kind of went after the video gaming community, right? And embedded themselves in these communities and when used it as a way of kind of like fostering and kind of like fanning the flames of kind of racial resentment and white supremacy and all sorts of brutal ways. And there's really important lessons for kind of getting involved in these kind of cultural spaces. I mean, in an organic way. I mean, you come in from the outside into this cultural space, you can be laughed out of them. But I mean, if you're kind of like doing this stuff, and to see that in the D&D community, at least kind of in some of the communities I was looking at, to see them engaging this stuff in really open and frank ways is freaking really cool. And so that's a kudos to all those folks out there in the D&D communities who are actually working with this stuff and trying, you know, not to reproduce these kind of discourses of, you know, of this racial discourses when we know that, you know, race itself is a fiction, right? It was constructed, it was built, right? So to see them kind of look for ways of kind of, change that and kind of alter the way that we play this by still making the game enjoyable and engaging in the same way is just great to see. So, do check that out. It's Tasha's Cauldron of Everything. If you're kind of, into D&D or like that stuff, and I'll look for the other, I don't know if I have it saved in my computer here. It might be in one of the files, but, I'll share that some of the other stuff at probably at a later date. So that's cool. And then the last thing is, you know, that I have at least is that, you know, I'm looking forward. I'm going to do my best this weekend. I know it's Halloween weekend. I'm looking forward to, you know, doing trick or treating with my kids, hanging out there. It's gonna be, you know, last year it was really, really, you know, tamped down because of COVID and everything like this. And so it was, there was some people that came out, but it was very, very light, as you'd expect. But it's more people out this year, and it's going to be good to kind of gather with some, my son's friends, excuse me, come over, my brother-in-law, sister-in-law, my niece come over, and, you know, just kind of sit around and kind of like maybe have some pizza or something like this and enjoy the Halloween. And my kids are very excited about it. My daughter's got like a Halloween parade this afternoon, so we're hoping that it's not going to at school. So we're hoping it's not going to rain, so we can actually go over and kind of watch her. Otherwise, you know, we're not gonna be able to watch, but we'll see. So that's there. But I hope to be able to find us the time to watch Dune, because I've been hearing some really good things about it, although, you know, I also know some people are not as kind of thrilled with it. But if you were there for, like, you know, the different iterations of Dune over the years, supposedly this one is closest to the book, at least the first book. So I'm just excited to see what it is, right? I happen to love David Lynch's version. That was the original version. It was very dark and weird, and I actually really like that original version, even though it got really panned. It's gone on to have kind of like a certain kind of like cult status and legendary status in sci-fi, but this will be or it's like sci-fi fantasy kind of stuff. But I've heard some really good things about this, so I'm looking forward to do this, and I will let you know after I watch it what my read is on it and whether or not I'll recommend it to you. But anyways, that's what I got going on this weekend. You dressing up for Halloween this weekend, Sean? You doing some trick-or-treating?
Yeah, I'm going out, but I don't know if I'm doing any trick-or-treating.
Just treating.
Yes. There's gonna be actually a block party in our neighborhood, where Elementary Coffee's at. They're shutting down the block, so like Manjiqui and Elementary right there.
Yeah.
So we're gonna be going out to that. It's $10 charge to get in. Should be fun. So, and I'm dressing up as Gritty.
Dressing up as Gritty. Oh man, I forgot. You know what? I even have this like here. Look.
Nice. My mask is in my closet right now, but
yeah, I was like, you know what is funny is like last night I was looking, because we talked really just briefly, said, oh, we should just like put the mask on the podcast, and I have Creature of the Black Lagoon mask, which my friend Mike would love, because he posted this. It was his wedding anniversary this week, and he posted a picture of like from the Creature of the Black Lagoon, kind of like the creature kind of reaching out to this woman screaming, and he's like, go, happy anniversary to my wife.
So like I actually started the a movement in the Sisters of the Night,
yes, you did,
Discord, by buying the Gritty mask, and then everyone else did, and then it was a good experience of not panic shopping, but
not panic shopping.
No. I'm at a loss for words right now.
I panic shop for a Gritty mask.
No, like I'm just like impulse shopping. There we go.
Impulse shopping. I like the panic shopping thing. Oh my god, what am I gonna do? Gritty mask.
It was an impulse purchase. There we go.
Gritty mask and a bunch of toilet paper.
No, I'm sorry. I was impulse shopping.
No, I know what you're saying. Just fun.
Yeah.
It's funny. Yeah, no, that was pretty cool. And that's like everyone was posting their pictures in the Sisters of the Night Caucus podcast or Discord with their Gritty mask, which was fun.
Yes. So.
So you're actually, you know, and you've got kind of, you know. Got.
And I have a Flyers jersey too, so it works.
There you go.
Chris Pronger from 2010.
So are you going to show up with like at the block party in the Gritty mask, or are you just going to do the thing where it's kind of like on the top because you don't know if it's going to be
No. I'm going to show up with like
there you go.
Yes.
Excellent.
I have all intentions showing up with that.
Excellent. Well, anything else going on, Sean?
No, nothing really.
Nothing really. Well, hey.
Just wait until next week, election day.
Day, big deal. This is kind of been holding. It feels like I'm holding my breath for a little bit. So, good. Well, listen. I hope you have an awesome time at the block party, and for everybody who's out there still, you know, who's listening, I hope you have a safe and happy Halloween. You know, take the little bits of joy and fun that the holiday season brings about. The holiday season being Halloween, right? Although I have to say. This is okay. I love Christmas, right? I love Christmas. I love the snow, right? I love winter and all that kind of stuff. And I had to run to Target to try to find something last night. And they started putting the Christmas stuff in, and it made me happy. Now, Normally, I don't like, you know, if there's Christmas stuff that comes out in October.
Sorry, that made me laugh.
I did not expect that, but they're starting to put it out. I'm like, oh, Christmas. Like, that's what my insides did. So,
well, I mean, I was looking at the weather and it's like, oh, it's like a high of like 52 next week. I'm like, all right, that's awesome. Like, yeah. We're getting to this yep. part of that. You know, because last year, like around election day, it was like 75 and sunny.
I know, it sucked. I know. This year was like I took my dog out to a walk this morning. And I was like, oh my God, this is awesome.
Did you see that photo I ended up getting of the bridge?
Which one? You've been posting a bunch of bridge pictures lately.
With the clouds?
Yes, that was great.
Yes. So I ended up bought like a neutral density filter. So that was like a 15-second exposure. It came out to be a pretty good photo.
There you go. Emily says in the chat, says if you have any unwanted candy and you're kind of in this neck of the woods, you can bring it to the Springtown Post Office up until November 5th, and they're going to send that extra candy to the troops. It'll be candy for the troops. So thank you, Emily, for putting that in. So that's Springtown Post Office. I'll look for, see if I can put a link in the show notes too as well. That'd be great. So if you got some excess candy, looking what to do with, you don't feel like just kind of leaving it in a big bowl so you stuff your face with it throughout the next few weeks, head on over to the Springtown Post Office through November 5th, and they're collecting it for candy for the troops. Might be a good idea too, if you're not near the Springtown, to just check with your local post office and see if they're doing something like that similar too. So that's awesome. Thank you for that, Emily. Well, anyways, hey, everybody, get out there for Election Day. We will be back on for Out to Coop Live on Monday at 7 p.m. We'll be talking about the beginning of COP26 and some of the climate crisis and the Build Back Better stuff. We're trying to unpack some of the stuff around there and climate a little bit more. I think that we'll have some more analysis done to be able to take a look at that here. I initially, as you may have seen online, I wish you was reaching out to have some folks on as a guest to talk about that. But look, frankly, I knew it was a long shot because number one, it's the day before the election day, before election day. And number two, it's a little bit of a short notice. And number three, there's a lot of those people are already engaged with covering stuff or kind of events related to COP26. So I knew schedules were going to be busy, but I've got a couple people already that are will be on to talk about climate stuff in the coming weeks. And I'll leave that as a bit of a surprise for going forward. I was very excited who we're going to be able to bring on the show. So it's good. Cool. Also recommendations. If you have folks that you think would be good to reach out to, good to have on the show, please let me know. I know I'm going to be reaching out to the folks up in the Quakertown School District. I just had a message. I think I mentioned this earlier this week. I had somebody reach out to me about the school board election in Quakertown. I did not have a lot of information about it, and it was a message that came in through LinkedIn, and I am like virtually never on LinkedIn, so I didn't get it right away. So I apologize for that. But I will be reaching out to them to find out what's happening up there in Quakertown too as well. Because on November 3rd, just all this stuff doesn't go away. So we're going to need to keep on following that stuff moving forward. So anyways, have a safe and happy Halloween, everybody. Get out there and vote on Election Day. And, you know, this is like go time. It's like happy time on Halloween and go time on November 2nd. So there we go. So this is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken. I want to remind you can help support this show and all of our podcasts by going to patreon.com/rcpress. You can become a patron for as little as $5 a month. I can't tell you how encouraged it makes for all the folks who've just been out and supporting us. It's great. Make sure you subscribe to our YouTube channel. Let's get us over 200 in the next month. See ya!